Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund. Helping you discover the Twin Cities, this is Radio K's Real College Podcast, online and on the air. My name is Matthew Curtis, and this week we're talking about identity. We present two stunning stories on how the lives of minorities are being affected in this era of rapid civil change. Of course, problems are being acknowledged and voices are being heard, but aspects of society are notably lagging behind. Max Fuller talks to an atypical Confederate flag supporter, David Lean gets up close and personal with mascot protests, and we also hear the word on the street with Jack Loftus. And it all starts right now on the Real College Podcast. Welcome to the Real College Podcast. My name is Matthew Curtis, and I am joined by
Patrick Shirky,
David Lean,
Dikembe Max Tumbo, a.k.a. Bamax Obama, a.k.a. Max Keel O'Neill, a.k.a. Maxwell Fuller.
Thanks, man. And today we're talking about identity, and it's quite the big topic, as we usually discuss on the Real College Podcast, but we'll make it kind of small for you guys. We'll make it kind of relatable, and that's kind of the plan that we have today. And we have really special stories that kind of focus on identity and what it means to be who you are. All right, Max, why don't we start with you, man? What's going on?
All right, so like about a month ago, I was listening to a story on NPR about a pro-Confederate flag rally that was happening at the state capitol. So obviously, as a black man, I was like, awesome, I'm going to be there because I just want to see people's reactions, and it would be a great story. So I, when it starts getting closer to the rally, I start looking up people that I can talk to, and I find out that the organization behind the rally is this group called Minnesota 10,000 for Southern Heritage. And so I was like, all right, well, who's like the organizer of this? Who are some of the head people? And I'm typing, and the only thing I can find is that the guy who organized all this guy named BC Johnson. And the only place I can find him is Facebook, and his Facebook picture is a bald eagle in front of a Confederate flag. So naturally, I already have an image constructed of this guy in my head.
What does that guy look like?
Balding, have little wiry hair sticking out of like the typical wife beater that he wears 5 days a week. Got a gut, and just a typical racist-looking white dude. But he's actually a black man from South Carolina, which obviously my head exploded when I found that there's a black man organizing a pro Confederate flag rally.
And why was that surprising to you, like as a base question?
Because that just goes against everything of being black, especially in 2015. It just makes no logical sense to me. It'd be like a cow eating a hamburger. The Confederate flag was essentially represented the Confederate States of America when they seceded from the United States in 1861. And it represented all the people that from the southern states that were essentially fighting for slavery, or as B.C. Johnson calls it, states' rights. And essentially it just represents just like a whole era of oppression and slavery and just really horrible times for black people. So,
and even in 2015, like things are happening in regards to the Confederate flag.
Yeah, because it still flies in a lot of it's a lot of states, like state flags. It's a part of it, and it's still flying around a lot. And it recently came back into the spotlight because of Dylann Roof and the shootings at Charleston. And now, 100 plus years later, we're finally getting some progress with the Confederate flag, if you can call it that.
Great. So thanks, man. I understand there was a struggle initially to actually get him to talk to you.
Yeah, when I first contacted him, he told me that he would be available for an interview as long as I wasn't one of those race-baiting media types, in his words. And if that was the case, then he said he wanted nothing to do with me, which I found odd because we are two black men talking about the Confederate flag, guess what's probably going to come up? Race. So he kind of, when I first met him, should I tell the story about how I just met him randomly? All right, well, so that happened, and we kind of had our discussion. He was asking me how I felt about the Confederate flag, and I said that I obviously have my opinions, but it's the story's not about my opinions, it's about yours. And he kind of stopped talking to me after that and, like, misled me, and I didn't end up going to the Confederate flag rally. So I was kind of just like, all right, forget that guy, I'll do a different story. And then I ended up being at the mall, and I was getting ready to cross the street. I had just missed the light rail. So I was like, all right, I'll just go into the mall and hang out for a little bit. And when I'm waiting to cross the street, I see a guy standing across the street with a camo backpack, like douchey DMV kind of sunglasses on, and a Confederate flag shirt. And he's a black guy. So I'm like, no way. And I go up to him like, yo, are you BC Johnson? And he's like, yeah, who the hell are you? And I'm like, I'm Max. I'm the dude that's been trying to interview you, man. Nice to meet you. I shook his hand. And he basically told me that, in a way, he kind of thought I was like an undercover Black Lives Matter agent or something.
Fun.
Trying to like infiltrate his little organization. But we met. We talked. He said he'd be more willing to do an interview. One of the main takeaways from like hanging out with them, though, was like, I thought it would be really easy to make the story and just be like portray him in a negative light and be like, oh, this guy sucks. But even though he's so wrong and ignorant and like counterintuitive to everything that I stand for, I don't hate him still.
I mean, I think, I don't know, having you on staff like allows us to speak volumes about these huge topics. So I really appreciate you doing the story.
Oh yeah, man. It was awesome. It was like,
all right, we'll now hear Max Fuller's story on BC Johnson, I suppose.
Yeah. Eyebrows rose around the Twin Cities about a month ago when news surfaced that there was to be a pro-Confederate flag rally held at the state capitol by a group that called themselves the Minnesota 10,000 for Southern Heritage. Now, to some, this may come as no surprise, as Minneapolis was recently ranked the third worst city for black people to live in the country. But to many that still look at Minnesota as the home for everything progressive and great, this was a proverbial blow to their politically correct egos. What does come as a surprise, however, is the group's choice of leader. Meet BC Johnson, an extremely conservative Republican truck driver that is a staunch advocate for the Confederate flag. Oh, and did I forget to mention he's a black man?
Oh, no way! Jerry! Jerry! Jerry!
The man born Bo Cephas Johnson, nicknamed BC, is a man of many contradictions. He's a black man that grew up in 1950s South Carolina that loves the Confederate flag. A man blacker than Wesley Snipes' left nostril that refers to himself as a redneck. A black man that just so happens to be living that's against the Black Lives Matter movement. Absolutely nothing about BC Johnson makes any remote sense. And he doesn't really care.
People will say, well, you're a black man holding the Confederate battle flag. That's a conflicting message. It's only conflicting when you not only are ignorant of history, but you fail to learn history as well. When I'm out in public, I don't go and take Michael Jackson pills to make myself as light as you or whiter or whatever and straighten my hair or put on the wig or whatever. I am me. I do not have problems out here in the public like minority supremacist groups are trying to say.
Now you may be asking, how in the hell does something so illogical as a black man being a Confederate flag advocate come to be? Well, it turns out that it started in a place where lots of illogical things are born and raised. The internet.
From the information I had on education and the friends I was trying to keep, they said that, you know, the flag was all racist and people that supported the flag was racist. So what it simply took for me is I separated myself from them and I just did some independent research on my own. That's the beauty of the internet. I don't have to go by what the government decides they want printed and won't published in public libraries. The thing is, you have to make up your own mind. Now, I didn't just start as of yesterday, you know, openly supporting the Confederate flag or whatever. I've had my opinion. I have really felt that I've had to have had my opinion restricted because being a black man, that's just not kosher for a black man to be an open Confederate flag supporter.
Despite the 80-plus references to slavery in the Declaration causes of seceding states, BC says the Civil War was not about slavery, and the flag doesn't represent centuries of oppression, dehumanization, and violence. Psh, no, of course not. The Confederate flag represents states' rights.
For the longest time, a lot of people were comfortable with the ideology of saying that the Civil War resulted because the Southern states wanted to protect slavery, and also saying that they fought to protect slavery, and they also said that it was a white versus black law, where in doing research and studying, you find out that the Civil War was not about slavery from the South's perspective. Slavery was something that happened over 150 years ago. Slavery started outside of this land. It's not about racism. It's not about being a bigot. It's about standing up for what's right. That is the bottom line in a nutshell of what the Confederate battle flag, regardless of what people want to justify it for. The Confederate battle flag has a different representation, and on top of that, the Confederate battle flag is a flag of the soldiers, because the soldiers took the fight to protect popular sovereignty. Without them taking that fight for popular sovereignty, you would not be sitting here interviewing me right now.
I wouldn't be here right now because I would probably be picking cotton, but nonetheless. When BC is not rallying for the Confederate flag, he spends a lot of his free time on Facebook, espousing many troubling worldviews that typically would be reserved to your racist old high school friends. It should come as no surprise that the social network was the breeding ground for BC's Minnesota 10,000 for Southern Heritage group, where BC has an almost cult-like following, garnishing dozens of likes and comments for statements like, "Obama, you and your relatives are not going to take over this world," and many other things I can't say on the radio. One of his favorite targets as of late has been the Black Lives Matter movement. He's even gone as far as calling them a minority supremacist group.
Well, how do you define a minority supremacist group?
Just what it says, a minority supremacist group, blank, blank matters. And again, you look at the actions and reactions of that in itself, and you look at the victim card here being played, you know. And then lately, like I said, there's been a split between, there are now two minority supremacist groups up here instead of one, and that tells you that there's not a problem with the outside society, it's a problem within the quote-unquote community. So that is what I mean by that. You're focusing on one particular color, you're focusing on one particular exterior appearance. You know, if you're saying that your life or certain ethnicity's life matter, why are you guys not addressing issues within the same group, and you're trying to say everybody else is attacking you, but you have division within yourself? Mm-hmm. So that tells me right there's not an issue with non-whites in Minnesota. There's an issue with non-whites as a whole. That is the problem.
Ironically, the same guy that said he feels restricted as a black Confederate flag supporter doesn't believe in racism for much the same reason that old white Republicans don't believe in racism. Simply because they don't see it.
I've seen things with my own two eyes, and from where I've been all around this country, I am still able to sit here and speak with you. So, I mean, again, if it was really so, you know, racist or whatever, why am I still here? I will tell you a little known fact of South Carolina. the Ku Klux Klan is very active in South Carolina. They are openly marching and openly burning crosses. Also, in South Carolina, the racial makeup, white people outnumber black people 2-1. So if that were the case, don't you think if it was an issue of race where whites are hating blacks, the blacks would have easily been annihilated? So again, we have to start asking the proper questions, and we have to start doing the proper housekeeping when we want to play the race card.
When I asked BC what drives him to be so outspoken and relentlessly give his unpopular opinion on such things, he tells me it's not so much of a choice as it is a calling.
You guys will see me so much as you see me up here because, I mean, somebody, instead of us just muttering amongst ourselves of how wrong it is, someone has to do something. Someone has to stand up for what's right. And if it's just only one person standing up for what's right, guess what? That one person will speak volumes from the masses of those willing to sit here and do things wrong, especially do wrong things in the public eye. At some point in time, I would love to return back to my normal life and just sit and talk shit and voice my opinion or whatever. But, I mean, right now, I feel that the public needs me. So, I'm here. I always accept the call of duty. I took an oath, you know. Just because I'm not formally in the services does not mean that my oath is done. But I should be home in my recliner, smoking my cigars and my pipe and drinking bukus of beer and alcohol. But, I mean, I'm here for the calls of duty. So, yeah.
At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if BC supports the Confederate flag or believes in racism or not, because the fact of the matter is he's still black. And no matter how hard he tries to jump ship, he's in the same boat as the rest of us, and he'll always be just another Negro.
The shape of your nose and the shape of your lips. Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet?
For the Real College Podcast.
Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Radio K's Word on the Street. My name is Jack. I'm a DJ at Radio K, and I'm here to let you know about all the hottest shows going on in the cities this week. Start off your week with Makachu and the Shapes at 7th Street Entry on Tuesday night at 7:30 p.m. Don't miss this chance to see the very accomplished songwriter Makachu, who co-wrote the soundtrack to the 2014 film Under the Skin. See her Tuesday along with the Shapes, where she'll be playing hits from her newest release on Rough Trade Records, Good Sad, Happy Bad. Here's a track off that record. It's called Sea Air. Moving right along to Thursday night, you can head back to the 7th Street Entry at 7 p.m. and see Mitski along with Palehound and Powerbottom. Mitski's music has been compared by Austin Pudding to a dying racetrack greyhound, graceful but still kind of sad. She's touring after the release of her new record, Bury Me at Makeout Creek. Check out this track off that album. So please hurry, leave me, I can't breathe. Please don't say spend your Friday night at Jaime's Record Store on Lake Street with local group Oaks and local punkers Kitten Forever, two great local bands and a great local record store. This has got to be one of the loudest and rowdiest shows that one can imagine happening at Jaime's, so definitely don't miss it. That starts at 7 p.m. Here's the title track from Oaks' new release, Animal Life.
Dreams. Saturday night, there are two options. The Dandy Warhols are playing with the Shivas at Fine Line Cafe starting at 8 p.m. If you haven't seen the Warhols yet or you want to see them again, here's your chance. Their last album came out in 2012. That was called This Machine. Here's a track off that record. Also on Saturday night, the Canadian garage rock duo King Khan and BBQ Show are playing along with Milk Lines and Joust at the Turf Club starting at 8 p.m. King Khan and BBQ are the two pieces of the King Khan and BBQ Show, both past members from the band Space Shifts. They just released a new record after reuniting in 2012 after a breakup. It's called Bad News Boys. That's all I got this week. Check out more great shows going on this week and beyond at RadioK.org under the Events tab. We'll leave you with a track from the King Khan and BBQ Show. This is Bye 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 off their newest release, Bad News Boys. This is Radio K's Word on the Street. My name's Jack. We'll see you next week.
Welcome back to the Real College Podcast. My name is Matthew Curtis, and I'm joined by...
I'm David Lean.
Max Fuller.
And Dave, we're going to talk about your story now, and how did this whole thing come to be?
So I found out about this story actually through another story that I was doing. I was reporting on a voting rights initiative here in Minneapolis, and they had talked a lot about reaching out to communities of color and underserved communities, so I was doing a little research on that to see if they were actually following through on that. And I went over to the American Indian Center over on Lake Street and was talking to their director over there. And there was a poster for this rally that was called No Honor in Racism. And it was about sports representation and media of using appropriated images of Native American people as mascots. There had also been some posters for that rally, like, around campus and stuff. And so I saw that and was like, that sounds really interesting. I'd like to cover that. Rallies are always good stories. And so the university has this policy where they ostensibly don't allow teams with that kind of name or those kind of mascots to play here. But while the Viking Stadium is being built, the Vikings are playing at TCF. And, you know, the NFL money is just too good to turn down. And so that rule kind of goes out the window. And so on that day, the Vikings were playing the Kansas City Chiefs. And so they were going to do this protest outside of TCF. And a similar protest had happened last year, 2014, in November, when the Washington team came and played the Vikings. And it was actually the biggest anti-mascot protest ever. Thousands of people came, and it was a big deal.
Why do you think that, I mean, this, like, the teams like the Redskins and the Cleveland Indians have been around for decades. Why do you think that now in 2015 and in recently that it's becoming more of a big deal?
I mean, you know, the fight against mascots has actually been going on for a couple of decades now. And ever since the 90s, they've been starting to make real headway on it. And in the past couple of decades, there's been something like 3,500 teams across the nation, all the way from, like, elementary school to the NFL, that have like heard that call and like taken away their names, changed their mascots, and really tried to improve that. You know, in these last couple years, there have been a lot of big social protest movements in the nation. And so there's just kind of now like the media is like, you know, they look for those types of stories, and there's more of a spotlight that can be shined on them. And, you know, I was talking, one of the people that I, or kind of the main interview that I got, her name was Tara Hauska, and she's a tribal rights attorney out from Washington, D.C. And she said that the reason that most protests happen about, like, the biggest protests happen over these mascots and not any of the, any number of other issues that face Native communities is that it intersects with so many things that go on with them and their representation. And it's also pretty much, like, the only thing that the media will pay attention to. So, you know, they could have, you know, movements and protests about other things, but it's this one that has so much financial investment of so many people and, you know, it's, oh, that's my team and whatever, that, you know, that's where they get a lot of the attention. So
do you think it's just a matter of time?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think there's been a lot of good progress made. As I said, there's that, like, again, there's those thousands of teams over the past few decades that have changed their team names and their mascots. There's a lawsuit against the, Dan Snyder and the Washington team that the activists who are suing him just won another stage, actually. And it's I think the team will have one more chance to appeal it, and they will. But after that, they're probably going to win it. The activists will probably win again. And I'm not exactly – I don't really know about trademark law and that kind of thing. And so I don't really know what that's going to mean. But it is at least showing that – I think the kind of tide is changing on that. And again, because of, you know, things like, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, a lot of these issues of race and representation are coming to the fore in national discussion. So I think, you know, people are kind of, especially with something like, you know, the Washington team, they're like, yeah, I get that. Like, that should not be a thing.
We're going to hear David Lean's story on the anti-mascot protest. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
The sound of a lone drum echoes across the steps of Northrop Auditorium on the University of Minnesota campus. The smell of sage fills the frigid air as a burning branch is passed around, engulfing people in its purifying smoke. The people stamping their feet and warming their hands are here to protest the use of Indians as mascots at the Vikings vs. Chiefs game today at TCF. As the initial group of a few dozen people swells to over 100 on this cold morning, a man picks up a megaphone. This is Clyde Belcourt, who co-founded the American Indian Movement here in Minneapolis in 1968. He's here to rally the troops, literally.
I'm gonna be declaring war today.
If you didn't catch that through the megaphone and the wind, he just said he's declaring war. It's being waged at the racism, erasure, and oppression represented by the names and mascots used by teams such as the Chiefs, the Cleveland Indians, and of course the Washington Redskins. By now, several hundred people have gathered to protest, and then the march to the battlefield begins. The march is led by a red pickup truck carrying a drum group. Following behind them are about a dozen Aztec dancers wearing massive headdresses, rattling shells around their ankles, and the technicolor dress of their ancestors. During the march, I caught up with one of the women at the center of this movement. Tara Hauska is a tribal rights lawyer from Washington, D.C. She works with legislators and tribal governments and co-founded NotYourMascot.org last year, which organized the largest ever anti-mascot protest here last November when Washington played the Vikings at TCF. Hauska says there's a reason more people come together about mascots than over other issues facing Indian communities.
Unless it's affecting America's sports, we don't really get paid attention to. There are movements about all kinds of issues across Indian country, but it's this that gets paid attention to. And I think, you know, because the media is willing to pay attention to this, this does provide a platform to talk about those other things. This is intersection with every other issue that we face, because we're not viewed as people. We're viewed as, you know, do you live in a teepee?
As the march arrives at TCF Stadium, that outdated cultural conception Hauska mentioned is on full display. Chiefs fans pass the protesters in headdresses and red face, some scoffing, others doing the team's tomahawk chop toward the crowd. As the protesters assemble in front of TCF, they're surrounded by cops. The few hundred people here pale in comparison to the thousands who assembled last November, but what they lack in mass, they make up for in passion. Following a prepared statement from President Kaler expressing solidarity with the protesters, Susana De Leon, an immigration attorney who grew up in Mexico, takes the podium.
I don't believe a word the president has said. This is sanitized dissent. We are not able to go in there and do civil disobedience. That's wrong. That is an infringement upon our First Amendment rights. So I say to you today, yes, we declare war. We declare war.
The recurring theme of war may leave some listeners confused. One of the goals historically of the anti-mascot movement has been the removal of overtly war-centric depictions like the Savages and the Fighting Sioux. Isn't all this talk of war playing into that stereotype? Back at Northrop, Mitch Walking Elk, a protest singer and environmental activist, said that unfortunately, Native Americans are forced to be in conflict with somebody in order to feel like somebody. Many Indians at the rally feel that they must wage what De Leon calls a cultural war, or else see the erasure of their national agency. While the physical wars waged against Indians in the past were recounted in detail in many of the day's speeches, the cultural war facing Indians today may be even harder to fight, since many, if not most, of their opponents are no longer insidious as much as oblivious. I talked to a few Chiefs fans observing the rally, and they didn't understand why a rally should even be happening in the first place.
I understand the Redskins thing, but the Chiefs, it's not really a derogatory word at all. It's just the, like, the name of a person, of a tribe. It's not derogatory at all. I take no offense to it. I don't see why anyone else does.
I don't feel like it's racism. My wife's family comes from Native Americans, and I feel like it's more of a respect thing than anything. And I think it's people making something out of nothing. So
I would argue that the Washington Nationals or the Senators or whatever, wouldn't that be racist too? If Chiefs are racist, I don't know.
If you're racist against Turtles and your team name is the Terrapins, I mean, there's always a way to find the thing. Someone can find their soapbox.
The Chiefs' president of operations, Mark Donovan, made a statement about the controversy surrounding the team at the NFL 101 Awards earlier this year. He said the team is working with a group of 8 people from the Native community to gain a better understanding of these issues, and starting this November, informational pamphlets will be handed out at every Chiefs game to better educate fans. Hauske says it doesn't matter how informed or uninformed fans are, however. She says the mere existence of Native mascots and team names is harmful to her community.
I think that no matter what your opinion is on the issue, whether you're for, you know, mascots or against them, there's empirical evidence showing that Native American mascots harm the self-esteem of Native American children. And that is happens no matter what your opinion is, no matter what you think, that is the reality. And so, you know, if they can get one guy to say, hey, I love mascots, that doesn't change the fact that it hurts our children.
The empirical evidence Hauske cites exists in sociological studies from sources such as Stanford, various academic journals, and independent studies issued by tribal nations. The ones I found are not quite as conclusive as Hauske claims, although some find a clear connection between representations in sports media and the psychological harm to Native Americans, especially youth. Other studies state that these mascots may have a harmful effect, but that more research is required. Several studies were commissioned by tribal and activist organizations, which doesn't invalidate their findings, but raises questions of potential bias that we don't have time to discuss here. However, dozens of organizations such as the American Psychological Association, the American Sociological Association, and the United States Commission on Civil Rights, to name a few, have all unequivocally stated that these representations are racist and should be discontinued. But beyond the scientific debate about whether the mascots harm Native youth, the rally provided a vivid example of the fact that they can. Lupe Thornhill was one of several high schoolers asked to speak on their experiences, and halfway through her speech, the pain was too much for her, and she broke down crying.
It makes me really sad that we have to fight for something that should be given to us, and one thing that we don't even have is honor. And it just hurts me a lot to know that we have to fight for our honor. And I don't know how many times we have to say it, and I'll keep saying it till I die. There's no honor in racist names.
The rally provided visceral examples of the pain and anger these teams can instill in real people. But despite that hurt, the protest was marked by a sense of hopefulness that progress can be made. And it in fact has. Over the last several decades, thousands of teams, from elementary schools to the NFL, have changed their names, mascots, and iconography, Campuses across the country have banned offensive teams both home and visiting, and activists recently won another stage in a suit against Dan Snyder and the Washington team. But most importantly, these issues and protests have sparked a national discussion and reminded many citizens that Native Americans still exist. From Minneapolis, this is David Lean for Real College Podcast.
And that concludes this week's Real College Podcast. Thank you to Max Fuller, David Lean, and Jack Loftus for contributing to this week's show. Our producers are Aaron Bolton, Max Fuller, Patrick Sharkey, and Jackie Renzetti. You can find us on RadioK.org, iTunes, and on Sundays at 6 p.m. on Radio K. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund, and thank you for listening.